show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, a Baseball Prospectus affiliate. We got some more things happening. We hinted at it, and we assumed it would happen, and Mike Moustakas was in fact traded, and we will get right into that in just a minute. But first, introductions. I, of course, am Jeff Herr, and with me, as always, the man who, if I have my way, will never be traded, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing on this very nice, very breezy summer evening, at least here in Kansas City?
I don't know if it's breezy out, but I mean, it's been pretty nice weather the last week or two.
I guess I shouldn't say breezy. There is a breeze, but it's not necessarily breezy, I suppose.
I don't know. I got the blinds
nice
closed,
enough to,
so.
Fair enough. Nice enough that you can go out. I went out for a walk with my wife and daughter before the show, so that was nice. And I wasn't dripping with sweat when I came back. So that's a victory when you've entered August in Kansas City.
Yeah, that's not bad.
In my book.
It's a little spoiled lately with some of this weather, so I'm kind of worried about what the next couple weeks will hold when nature gets its retribution, heat-wise.
All right. I hinted at it just a second ago, and the moment has come and gone. Mike Moustakas has been traded, and it was, I don't know if it quite went down exactly how everyone expected, but hey, he ended up going to the Milwaukee Brewers, to join Lorenzo Cain. So the Brewers have become Royals 2.0.
Yeah, they got Joaquin Soria too.
They got Joaquin Soria too. So they're just collecting former Royals right now. Which
they want an Alcides Escobar. They can have him.
They can have him back if they want him. Who knows? Maybe they won't even have to give up anything.
Right.
They did have to give up something for Mike Moustakas, and what they gave up was an outfielder named Brett Phillips and a pitcher named Jorge Lopez. So first, we'll talk about Brett Phillips. He's the main centerpiece of the trade, and he was the number 10 prospect in the Brewers organization. He's Clint Scholes on BP Kansas City described him as a multi-tool center fielder with an 80 grade arm. So that's a pretty good one.
It's pretty good.
Given the scale stops at 80, I'd say that's pretty good. And he, again, according to Clint and his article, you can read the full article where he breaks down the trade on BP Kansas City, but he talks about Phillips having better than average speed, a tick above average power, the hit tool a little bit less than average by some, but he's shown some decent ability in the past. Then with moving on to Jorge Lopez, Clint describes him as an erratic right-hander who works in the mid-90s. With his fastball, has a plus curveball. He was, as recently as 2015, he was the number 2 prospect in the Brewers system. But unfortunately, he's had some problems in his limited time at AAA in the big leagues, and that has caused his stock to drop a little bit more. But, you know, there's still a little something there. That said, you know, we talked about it, obviously, all season. That's kind of been on the tip of our the front of our minds as far as Moose was going to get traded. When was it going to happen? Who was it going to be to? What was going to be the return? Because how many times did we talk about it that we weren't exactly sure? Because the beauty of Moose, if you will, definitely lies in the eye of the beholder. Because just the nature of the type of player that he is, that he's good additive player, as we've talked about before, not necessarily that impact player. So what would they get in return for that kind of – it just depends on how desperate a team is, how much they want him, what they see in him, et cetera. So it was kind of up in the air, but with specifically, you know, Brett Phillips and, you know, Jorge Lopez could turn into something. Who knows, maybe a decent bullpen arm But I was actually quite pleased with the return that they got for Moose, most likely because, you know, and I think I've alluded to it on the show a little bit in the past couple weeks, that I didn't think they were going to get a whole ton. You know, I only thought they'd probably get one player if he was going to be a Brett Phillips type, where, you know, major league ready type of a player. And then if they wanted multiple players, it'd have to be more in the, you know, type range if they wanted to go that route. But the fact that they were able to get a major league ready prospect like Brett Phillips and Jorge Lopez, who's also major league ready, I mean, that's pretty good for Moose. When I heard that and kind of dove into it a little bit and read what Clint wrote, I'm pretty happy with it. You know, my hopes were not all that high on what they would get for Moose. So the fact that they were able to get a couple players that can come in and help and that have team control, you know, that could provide some exciting things for the you know, Brett Phillips, that kind of player who maybe won't be a huge impact guy, but because of his skills, you know, defensively and some of the, you know, his decent speed, he's probably going to have some fun moments in his career with the Royals. So that'll be kind of cool. You know, it's always great to have that. So I'm pretty pleased. I mean, what were you feeling once you heard the deal, once you looked into who they were getting?
Well, that night was kind of interesting because it was that Friday night where the Royals had been rained out when they were in New York. And somewhere in the middle of the evening, some rumors kept popping up, and they frankly looked like just bogus accounts. You know, this time of year, people will, you know, you change the L to a capital I or something to put it in a Twitter handle and try to spread fake rumors for some reason. And, but a couple of accounts, it was weird. They had the trade like nailed like 3 hours before it was official. And I'm not sure how that came out, but like that kind of put all of us really sitting there thinking about like, okay, is this legit? Is this right? Does it seem normal? And Phillips had been pulled from the game that evening, or he wasn't in the lineup. He was a healthy scratch. So it seemed like there was some smoke there. But, like, you know, Phillips is someone I've kind of heard a little bit here and there over the last few years. He's been, you know, in some top 100s over the years. And as a result, I was pretty happy. I'm like you. I felt like it's a pretty good return. And overall, the whole structure of the deal, when you think of, like, you know, even when you think of like what other deals over the past couple of years have turned out to be, you know, they got a pretty good haul for, you know, 2 months of Mike Moustakas. Plus they got these guys without adding, you know, any kind of cash to the deal. The Brewers took on the entirety of the remaining contract, which, you know, it's only like $2 million and the buyout of the option year. So it's about $3 million that the Brewers are on the hook for. But, you know, usually to get guys who are major league capable, who have a little touch of upside in them, you know, for somebody like Moustakas, who, you know, had a .309 on base percentage. I mean, the home runs and doubles are nice, but .309 on base percentage, and some teams might worry about that. You know, I think they got a pretty good deal. I think some folks out there were more interested in getting some of those like high risk, high reward types that are, you know, 18, 19. You know, and I think if those kind of deals are out there, maybe there's something to it. It depends on the specific prospects. But, you know, the Royals got guys who, if they play well, they've got them for, you know, basically their entire team control. And they're going to be cheap for a couple of years, and then they hit arbitration. So, you know, if Lopez turns out to be anything, that's a really nice little, like, add-on. But Phillips is really the center of the deal, and, you know, he already, that first game that he was in Yankee Stadium, he makes a catch to rob a home run. Last night he hit a home run, his first hit with the Royals. You know, he's shown off the arm. He hasn't thrown anybody out, but he's aired it out a couple of times already, and it's pretty impressive. And you can go back and see a throw last season where he throws 104 and nails a guy at the plate. And it's just, you know, that's pretty impressive. So Phillips is someone who he may not be like a 300 hitter. He might not be a 30 home run guy, but I think you could see him be, you know, hit 260, 15 homers, have some speed, steal some bases, play good defense, and show off a good arm. I mean,
that's essentially what we thought Whit Merrifield was going to be before he turned out to be quite a bit more so far.
Yeah, and that's a lot of ways to contribute to a team that, you know, could definitely use someone who's really balanced. And Phillips is going to be around for a while. High-energy guy. It seems like everybody in the Brewer system just really likes him. You can go on YouTube, and he's doing all kinds of stuff. The famous clip is going to be the one where he's laughing. It's a very distinct laugh.
Yeah.
I'm not going to share it on the podcast as anything just because it is a little weird. But I mean, he seems like a really likable guy, real fiery guy. You know, someone who's going to go get his uniform dirty and really be a good teammate. And so I think the Royals kind of like those types of guys, but you know, Phillips is a guy who does all that and can play some. You know, he may not be like a super huge all-star, but if he's a big leaguer every year, that's pretty good value for a guy that you weren't going to get anything for in 2 months. And considering that earlier that day, the Phillies had gotten Asdrubal Cabrera and the Diamondbacks, I think it was, got Eduardo Escobar, it was starting to kind of thin out. The Angels were starting to sell off pieces, so they weren't really a destination. The Braves didn't seem to be interested as they, you know, kind of had been linked to. So for the Royals to get Moustakas traded off and get a pretty good return while the market seemed to kind of like fade a little bit, I think it's a good deal. You know, I guess I get the gripes that they didn't go get some phenom, but like, who knows what was available. You know, when you look at Brett Phillips and you look at Jorge Lopez, these are both guys who have been in top 100 overall prospect lists. Lopez as recently as 2016. Phillips as recently as this preseason. So for a team like the Royals that had nobody in those lists, and when they do get someone on there, it's like Brady Singer, who's in the 60s after drafting him, or Khalil Lee, who's up in the 90s. You know, for other lists, you got two guys who are former top 100 prospects and who have shown that they can have some success at the big league level. You know, there's a certain point where it is valuable to bring in guys who have shown that they can actually play versus guys who theoretically could play. And so I think it's a pretty decent little deal, and it's a lot more than I thought they would get from Moustakas. You know, just the potential. I mean, they might be everyday guys. They might not be superstars, but we've seen when we had Ryan Goins playing a ton and Drew Butera is the backup, and when he plays, you can kind of see the value of having someone who's a legit big league type guy versus, you know, some of those below replacement level guys. And I think both of these, both Phillips and Lopez, will end up being that type of player. See with Lopez, he just reported to Omaha. They're going to just kind of mess around with him and see if they want him starting or relieving. And then in September, he'll come up and do, you know, whatever they decide. You know, he's done a little bit of both. He was pitching in Colorado for Colorado Springs. Not a great place to pitch, so his minor league numbers don't look great this year. But he's done a little bit when he's been up with Milwaukee, and, you know, he's worth looking into. He's definitely somebody who I think could probably step in today and be one of their better bullpen arms, frankly. So that's a positive. You know, if that means that Brandon Maurer goes at some point, well, that's all right with me.
You kind of talked about this a little bit in the off season. It's kind of this sort of mixed approach that the Royals have been taking, where are they going all in for trying to be competitive and continue being competitive at the major league level? Are they going all in for a rebuild? Are they going half and half? You know, what are they doing? And so it's a valid question to ask. And I think a lot of people, especially after the start that the Royals have had now, are saying, okay, they're 36 and 74. 33-73, and they should just tear, you know, just throw everything and try and get as many young players as they can, and look towards, you know, 4 or 5 years from now, which I don't necessarily disagree with that as an idea, but it is just one idea and one method. And the other, of course, being, well, they can try and do a little bit of an accelerated path. And so it seems like that's what they're doing. And on BP Kansas City, Craig Brown had an article talking about this and trying to make sense of what Dayton Moore is doing and how he's trying to go about it. And Morris had some interesting interviews the last, you know, week or so, specifically his most recent interview, where he straight up said he was embarrassed by the team this year and how they didn't think that they were going to win, you know, a ton of games, but they didn't think that they were going to lose this many either. And so it's kind of lit a fire under him a little bit, to where he's okay, I want to get away from this level of losing, because he's been here before. He knows how it can just kind of build on itself and turn into this big thing. He knows. He's seen it. So he's ready to get away from it as quickly as possible. And one way to do that is you go get some guys who, you know, they're not your 19-year-olds. They're not your high A guys, but they're still prospects who maybe have had a little major league time, ready to jump right in. But you still have a lot of control over them. So if Brett Phillips turns into a very integral piece of this team, you know, the Royals have a lot of team control to deal with when trying to fit him into any sort of a window that may emerge. So part of this kind of plan, as many people have kind of thought, that Dayton Moore might be gearing up towards having a big push for the 2020 season. And, you know, 2020 and post-2020 seasons, of trying to kind of establish that window there, and that's what these kind of players like a Brett Phillips or Jorge Lopez fit into, where you can plug them in now, they can get their time, they can take their lumps a la 2011, 2012 Alcides Escobar, and be ready for when those other young guys, the Sully Matias of the world, the Nicky Lopez, those people are ready, those players are ready to come up and assume a bigger role. So, you know, instead of 5 or 6 years from now, maybe it's, you know, 2-3 years from now. And that's kind of what the hope is. I don't know. I don't know if that's what he's doing. It seems like it is. I don't know if that's the smartest way to go about it. I don't know if it's going to work. I mean, I guess we'll see. And kind of what one of Craig's overall points is to his article that I completely agree with is – he's earned the benefit of the doubt. You don't have to necessarily agree. You don't have to necessarily think that this would be the best method. If it was me, I'd probably be the worst GM ever, though. I think we've talked about this on the show, because I would always be willing to tear it down. Exactly. Yeah. You know, after 2015, I probably would have just torn it. And David Moore has even admitted, you know, publicly that he knows that probably would have been the smart business move, but he didn't want to do that. And that's fine. I don't fault him for that at all, but trading everyone off, that's something that I probably would have done as a GM. But, you know, I treat it like it's a video game, probably, which is probably why it wouldn't last very long. I probably never would have gotten the opportunity to win a World Series like DM has. But regardless, you know, part of Craig's point that I agree with is he's earned that benefit of the doubt. You win a World Series, you go to 2 World Series, you know, they had 5 straight seasons where they won 80 or more games, 3 winning seasons, 2 playoffs, 2 pennants, 1 World Series title. You know, there's so many, and it was actually a recent kind of Twitter kerfuffle between Dan Zimborski, who writes for Fangraphs now, who we've had on the show. I like Dan a lot.
Yeah.
But I disagree with him on this particular point, which is that, you know, and I'm trying to use his exact words because they were so so specific, but they're not his exact words. But essentially, you know, it was the Royals winning a World Series was a blind squirrel finding a nut every now and then. You know, that's essentially what he was
more
trying
or less,
to say.
Yeah.
And, you know, I disagree. I don't think that Dayton Moore, and you can go back and listen to the show. I don't agree with a lot of the moves that he makes, starting with the Will Myers trade for James Shields back in 2013. I didn't agree with that. I didn't like it. We were very angry on the show about it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it ended up working out. But I think where people kind of lose it when they try and argue that, oh, they just got lucky, is they don't give Dayton Moore and the Royals front office credit for leaning into certain things that they did right, or once they realized, hey, this isn't working out, but it's kind of working out over this way, even though we didn't expect it. So let's lean into that. You know, they had designs to have all those, you know, all those pitchers. They had Mike Montgomery, John Lamb, Danny Duffy, Chris Dwyer, Jake Odorizzi. All those guys were on the top 100 list 2010, and they were planning on having a lot of those guys as part of starting rotation. Didn't come to fruition, but they were able to find a lot of these different guys that were good relievers, very strong relievers, and they made a couple trades, made a couple signings, turned out to be really successful, worked out really well for them, and they leaned into it hard in 2015, and it worked. They had a, you know, by most accounts on paper, a pretty mediocre but rotation for most of the year, but they had that amazing bullpen, and it paid off. So, you know, there's a little bit of there's a little bit of kind of revisionist history, I think, when you have an argument like that, where you look at it and say, oh, well, Dayton Moore didn't do anything right. He just got lucky. I don't know if that's necessarily true. Yeah. I don't know. You don't have to agree with everything he does, but I do think he's earned the benefit of the doubt, because there were some decisions he made as the Royals as a team evolved that he made a decision to go in that direction, even though I don't know if that was the direction he initially intended to go, and it did pay off. So, you know, he's got a plan now, and I'm not 100% against it, but I'm not 100% on board either. If the plan is that they're going to make a push for the 2021 timeframe. But at the same time, I am, you know, kind of withholding a little judgment, knowing that, okay, if this team starts to evolve in a particular way and a certain aspect of the team starts to shine, I have faith that Dayton Moore will be able to recognize that and play into it to the best, you know, to the team's, to the best interest of the team, giving them the most opportunity for success. That's kind of how I feel on the home. That kind of rambled a little bit in terms of how I got around to my point. That's kind of where, looking at the trade and just kind of looking at the bigger picture of it, that's where I kind of came out as we talk about, you know, moving forward after the Moose trade and then after, you know, 2018 and beyond. There's a lot to take in there, I know. Sorry, yeah. I apologize. But, I mean, how do you feel? We'll start with that area of the kind of the supposed plan, the possible push for 2020. I mean, you think that's where he's going? And if so, do you agree with that move?
I mean, the thing is that, like, you know, the beginning of the year during spring training, just before the season started, like, the big thing was the group of players to keep an eye on were those guys in low A in Lexington, the Matias, Nick Prado, MJ Melendez. You had Khalil Lee in Wilmington. Lee's been moved up to double A. So, you know, presumably, probably will start in double A and maybe bump up to Omaha. So you're looking at probably 2 years before Khalil Lee gets here, and he's ahead of those other guys. So to me, it always comes down to, like, I've thought about this all season, is like, what players today are on the team who are going to be on the next good Royals team? And I've struggled to really come up with it, because you got guys like Danny Duffy and Sal Perez who have a shot to be there. But they might be leaving just as that next batch of players is coming up. And it's just because Sully Matias may not pan out. You know, Nick Prado may not work out. MJ Melendez might not pan out. Any of these guys could get hurt. It could derail them. But I do think that they drafted this year with the idea that some of these guys, Jackson Cower, Brady Singer, Daniel Lynch, these guys are going to be coming up in the next 2-3 years. And, you know, once they get here, that doesn't mean that the Royals are absolutely going to be good because they got their prospects here. 2011, Eric Hosmer was pretty good. Mike Moustakas was okay. Danny Duffy wasn't that good. Sal Perez, once he got here in August, was good. And none of those guys did a whole lot in 2012. You know, so you end up at this thing where you graduate all these guys from that first wave, which I think most would say were probably more talented and more highly regarded than this group. And even then, it took them until like the second half of 2013 to start actually clicking and winning games and being good. And at that point, you had to have traded Will Myers, who was, you know, a number one overall prospect in all of baseball, to get a pitcher that, because you didn't develop it. And so it's like, I don't think that the long-term plan for Dayton Moore worked out entirely, but I think most of it worked out. And in the spots where it didn't work out, he found short-term adjustments that did work. You know, the bullpen is the biggest thing. He found guys who can throw 100 miles an hour with great secondary pitches, and you can turn it into a 5 or 6 inning game. And then you play fantastic defense pretty much everywhere on the diamond. I mean, the 2014 to 2015 teams were really good on defense at pretty much every position. So, you know, that's kind of how they built it. And that's the only way that it probably would have worked for him, because, you know, Hosmer didn't turn into Joey Votto. Moustakas didn't become a 40 home run guy. Sal Perez has been good, but we've seen that, you know, every year he's progressively a little worse at the plate. And so all of that stuff kind of adds up to, well, you have to be able to adjust. And while it's great to say, okay, we're going to get all these prospects and they're all going to develop and they're going to be superstars, how often does that work out? I mean, I think that the assumption is that, A, some of these trades, particularly this Moustakas one, you're passing up somebody who's like a 50th overall prospect in all of baseball, who's 19 and lighting the world on fire. That deal probably wasn't there. I mean, I'm not going to rip Dayton Moore for not taking a trade that was not offered to him. I think that's pretty ridiculous. I mean, I don't know what was and wasn't. Maybe he turned down the exact same types of players who are younger, who maybe are going to be hitting the majors in 2 years. I don't know.
Right. It's that false choice kind of illogical argument thing where it's like, well, why didn't Dayton Moore just get the 50th best prospect in baseball? It's like, well, you know, of course, I don't know if that was offered. You know, that's a weird criticism to make, you know?
Yeah, I'm not going to rip him for something that he didn't have opportunity to do. And so right now, you know, when I think about who's going to be, you know, the players on the next good Royals team, well, it could very well be Brett Phillips right now. You know, that might be Khalil Lee. Might be Adalberto Mondesi if Rozel Herrera is still playing well with good energy and everything. You know, I don't know if he's destined for anything more than like a fourth outfielder utility spot, but he might be around. You know, he's got speed. He's got some of those kind of things that you know, Jerod Dyson maybe had with speed, defense, late inning replacement. And you know, maybe those guys are around. Maybe that's part of it. I don't know, but I think that at the same time, it's like, even if, let's say, Lee comes up, starts 2020 in the big leagues, you know, is he guaranteed to be good? No. Is Sully Matias, let's say he just mashes, you know, stops chasing bad pitches, cuts the strikeouts, zooms through the minor leagues next year, ends the year in Omaha, starts 2020 in Omaha and gets the Eric Hosmer call up in May. You know, does that mean that he's going to be good at the big league level? I mean, no. I mean, some of these guys are going to take some time, and you're going to need somebody to play in the meantime. And if you have some of those guys in place who can be good, productive players, when those rookies come up, they don't have to be the man from the start. They don't have to be that guy. They can, you know, be hitting seventh, eighth, ninth and figure it out, and you give them the opportunity to kind of, you know, work their way in. And plus, you know, maybe it doesn't work out for any of them, but you got Brett Phillips. And in 5 years, you're still going to have Brett Phillips. So if the Royals are good again in 2021, 2022, Brett Phillips should be on that team. And whoever they might have picked up, Joe Prospect, might not be. I mean, I get kind of like, I like prospects, and I like the idea behind, you know, let's, you know, rebuild, let's get those guys with, you know, who are lower on the aging curve who have that upside. But You just increase the variance and the risk of those guys, unless it's someone that you're dead set on, someone like a Juan Soto or Joe Adele. And it's like, man, those guys are exceptions for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, those guys are just like, it's just, I mean, it's like you said, why didn't you get that guy? Why didn't the Royals trade for Mike Trout? I don't know. So I don't know. I kind of get a little tired of the prospect fetish that goes on a lot. I mean, it's just like, just because you traded for a guy who's 19, 20 years old now doesn't mean that that guy's going to be that good in 3 years when it's time to like start really amping up the rebuild. Now, does that mean that this is the absolute correct decision? Are Oilers that close? I don't know. I mean, I don't know if they are. But, you know, if they go 5 years just being terrible because they're waiting on seven or eight guys who are 19, 20 years old right now to come up, I mean, that's kind of tough to swallow, too. And you know, they have to kind of see who can play at this level because you don't want to put everything behind Matias and Lee and et cetera, and get them to the majors and realize that, oh, we've got a lot of, you know, Bubba Starlings and Johnny Giovitellas and guys who just aren't going to shape out. Because then you've spent all this time building up to these guys that, you know, nothing comes of it. And, you know, maybe nothing comes of the guys that the Royals have now. You know, maybe Brett Phillips doesn't do anything. Maybe he's a perennial 220 hitter and the power's never there. And yeah, it's great that he's good on defense, but, you know, that might be all he is. And, you know, that's definitely a possibility. But at the same time, you know, in 100 at bats last year with Milwaukee, he had about 260, 270. So if he can do that again, that's pretty good. So, you know, I'm pretty open to the idea that I think it's definitely not a bad approach. Is it the best? Maybe not, but I don't think there's anything bad about it. I certainly don't think there's anything like fireable about it. Like, they didn't squander an opportunity in trading Moustakas. They, you know, they got a pretty good deal for a player that's only going to have 2 months if the Brewers miss the playoffs. For someone that they otherwise wouldn't have gotten compensation for, it's pretty good. And if that fits into a shifted plan or an accelerated plan, well, there it is. I'm okay with it. You know, I think that they got good players, and in the end, that's what it's about. Get good players and you figure it out. You know, if they're good enough to make it here, well, then they're probably good enough to be good in 4 or 5 years, and hopefully good enough that they want to continue to be in Kansas City while these other guys come up, get their feet wet, and learn how to be big leaguers and win games. So I don't have a problem with the plan. It's maybe not the ideal, but I think it's fine. I think it's legit. I think it's valid. And I don't know why, you know, I don't know why there's always so many complaints anytime Dayton Moore makes a move. It gets a little tiresome.
Yeah, and the additional kind of layer to this move is if Brett Phillips and or Jorge Lopez turn out to be very good players, and it appears in, you know, by the end of next year, or like midway through 2020, it appears like, okay, this is not going to happen. Maybe Sully Matias flames out and Nicky Lopez isn't what we thought he was going to be. And, you know, Adalberto Mondesi never ends up coming around at the major league level. And so it's like, okay, this is not coming together like we hoped. I don't know if we have a ton of options here. You can kind of do a reboot to the reboot. We're very familiar with that as Royals fans. Kind of restart the restart. By trading
a period of 95 to about 2012.
Yeah, you know, no big deal. But they, you know, you can... That's an option that's there for you. Or again, you could, maybe all those guys do turn out for, maybe, you know, a couple of them come up at the end of 2019 and a couple of them come up at mid 2020. And it's like, you know what? We're doing pretty well. The plan's coming together. These guys have had a couple of years now of major league success. We can trade them for, you know, other players. Maybe they find out they have a bigger need somewhere else. Maybe Salvador Perez, you know, 3 years from now, his knees are shot and he can't play catcher anymore. So they want to move him to first base or something. I don't know.
Totally likely.
Yeah, you know? So they like, okay, we need a catcher. So they have a surplus of outfielders. Well, they can trade a Brett Phillips and maybe get a major league ready catcher to fill in that role or something. You know, it. We've talked about this before. Having too many good players is never a bad thing, you know. And the reason that the Brewers were able to get rid of Brett Phillips isn't because they just were done with him and they didn't think he had anything. They just have a ton of really good outfielders, so they were dealing from a position of having a surplus of talent in that particular position, where in order to get someone like Moose, who they needed more at third base, well, they could afford to get rid of someone like Brett Phillips. So, you know, to be in that kind of a position is always a luxury, and it's a nice thing to have. So if the Royals can find themselves in that place in 2020, then, hey, good for them. Or, you know, they just, hey, Brett Phillips is our guy, and we need him on this team. Pass, they'll still have that option as well. So it just, it gives options. And, you know, again, I would probably steer on the side of, like I said, trying with the full-scale rebuild. But it's not without merit to at least do it the way Dayton Moore is potentially doing it currently. So that's kind of nice.
And part of it is I don't know how much this factors in, but they know they're going to have a top five draft pick
right
next year. They're going to have that whole panel of draft picks all picking in the top five of each round. So, I mean, they also know that while this year was a pretty successful draft and they're guys who, you know, could come up pretty quickly, you know, they've got another shot at a bunch of those guys next year. And so if they feel like they're in a good position to reload in next year's draft, well, you know, kind of work it out that way. I think it's fine. I think it's a decent way to kind of give it a shot. I mean, just looking at it from June 2nd to today, 2 months, less than 2 months, really. June 2nd, they claimed Rosel Herrera. Rosel Herrera was a 2014 top 100 prospect. They later traded for Brian Goodwin, a former first-round pick and a former top 100 prospect back in 2013-2014. They've traded for Brett Phillips and Jorge Lopez, who we've already said are previous top 100 prospects. And it's been a couple years for some of those guys, sure. But there are also guys who have been in that ranking. And, you know, I think there's something to be said for getting some of those guys who are in their, you know, 25, 26, 27 years old, getting them in and seeing what they can do. And right now, Rosel Herrera has an OPS plus above 100. And Brian Goodwin has been really, really good since he came to the Royals. And Brett Phillips doubled and scored tonight already. And so, you know, it's a small sample size. It's a very short-term kind of thing so far, but you know, that's a lot of talent that they did not have before, and I think it's fine to get that talent in. Like, it does not hurt anything. They're not really blocking hardly anybody in the minors right now. There's not a lot of guys in AA or AAA who are going to be losing playing time because of this. So you might as well play a guy who's 25 years old. He might not be that hotshot prospect, but, you know, if it means that you get them playing time and they're good in 3 years when they're 28, they're good. You know, that's what it comes down to. You know, get good players, low risk for a lot of these. You know, there's if Rosel Herrera is not good, well, you lost a waiver claim in 2018.
Yeah.
Oh well. You know, you traded a guy to Washington that was in the independent leagues last year. Okay.
I think you can absorb those losses.
Right. Exactly. So, you know.
But yeah, it is.
I'm okay with it. I don't have a problem with the direction of it. You know, it'd be really cool to get that top 50 guy and make it work. But we've seen it before. Those top 50 type guys don't usually go for those, quote, rental type players. They go for the guys that have a year or two of service remaining. And, you know, most of the time, that's what it is. The Royals didn't have those guys.
Yeah, and
so,
you know,
I don't know.
There's also, how much does that really mean? Like, it means that they're pretty well regarded and they've obviously got a lot of base level talent that people recognize, you know, but we said some names from our list of Royals players that were on that top 100 list in 2010, you know, Mike Montgomery, John Lamb. And Mike Montgomery has been a pretty solid reliever, but he was supposed to be a lights out starter, ace level starter. That didn't materialize. John Lamb, I don't even think he's even in baseball anymore. I don't even know if he's,
he was with the Angels not long ago, but he's bounced around. I mean, Reds, Rays, Angels.
He's had a tough time trying to find a way to stick. Chris Dwyer hasn't amounted to anything, you know. So, but at the same time,
I don't even know where Chris Dwyer left off. I haven't heard that name in like
maybe
3 years.
And then the flip side of that, of course, you know, you had Salvador Perez, who was never on a top 100 list. and nope. has
nor Greg Holland, nor Kelvin Herrera, nor Yordan yep. Ventura.
And then kind of the in-between where you've got an Adalberto Mondesi who was on a top 100 list and then kind of fell off and could still end up being some, you know, so it's what all that really means, who knows? So the idea of saying, okay, right. well, you have to get that, that only means so much as the weight you put into the theory behind how those lists are created. You know, so if you're someone that really believes in them, then okay, maybe you should, you know, maybe that's what the Royals should be going for. But, you know, there's also Dayton Moore has shown an ability to find that talent that maybe somebody else has missed, you know, and maybe, you know, he doesn't make the correct decision every time or even a lot of the time. But
no, sure doesn't.
He's had his moments, you know. Gerard Dyson was a big one, you know. People that's another instance that people were trying to argue. Oh, well, Dayton Moore just – they got lucky with Gerard Dyson. I mean, in the sense that you get lucky anytime you draft someone in the major league draft and they turn out to be a good player, yeah. Yeah, they absolutely got lucky.
First round or 50th.
But, you know, the Angels theoretically got lucky with Mike Trout. He was a first round pick, but he wasn't a number one overall pick. You know, people thought he would be good. They didn't think he would be possibly the best baseball player ever. But, I mean, that's where he's going to now. That's his ceiling at this point.
Right.
So
pretty good.
Right. You know, so it's just, I don't know.
I like the list. I think they're curated very well by very smart people, but they're not gospel either. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Bubba Starling was a top 20 overall prospect at some point. And I don't mean to keep beating up on Bubba, but he's probably the most glaring example of like a guy in that realm who looks like he's going to be a world beater and nothing ever pans out. So, you know, I, as much as I would really like to get some of those guys, sometimes it just doesn't work that way. And I think the Royals did a good job getting what they could and they filled in gaps in other spots and, you know, they feel comfortable with their guys that they have in the minors and, you know, I think they're doing all right. So not a bad return for Mike Moustakas. Who finally he did get to 20 homers with the Royals, like a couple days before he got traded. So at least there's that. I was kind of hoping he would do that just to give him another 20 home run season, which I think he's at four of those now, which puts him in company of like Brett and others. So Brett Balboni, they showed it on TV. Everybody saw it. I don't remember it.
Yeah.
So.
But one of the things that we've kind of talked to and are looking to the future-ness is Salvador Perez possibly moving to first base. But the reason I bring that up now is because the Royals have recently called up Ryan O'Hearn, who we haven't really talked about that much. He was kind of making waves a couple of years ago. People were talking about him quite a bit and the Royals prospect and the Royals system as kind of a bright spot. And then he just kind of cooled off a bit, I guess,
and
kind of flew under the radar since then. But he's up, and he played last night, and in his very first major league at bat, he hits a home run. They were in Chicago playing the White Sox, so congrats to him first for getting called up, and then for getting his first hit, for getting his first home run. You get it all out of the way; it's all downhill from here. And I just saw a little bit ago he already got another hit for an RBI tonight, so.
Walked also.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he was a player that some people were definitely excited about, and he, you know, so far the returns have been pretty solid, and it's only been two games, but you can't really complain about
two games.
You know?
Yeah,
definitely not enough to make any sort of an assessment, any sort of a sample size, but you know, sometimes players come up and they. You know, you're Alex Gordon and you strike out with the bases loaded on opening day, or you're
like three times.
Or you're Adalberto Mondesi and you get up to bat in the World Series, your first ever at bat, and you strike out on three straight pitches. You know, sometimes those things happen. So when somebody can come up and have success, you know, right at the start, even if he ends up tanking from now, you know, it's definitely a good thing. So pretty cool to see that. And you know, another player where we talk about if he turns into something, you know, again, it's just giving the Royals more talent, which is obviously number one, and more options, which is another big thing that, you know, if the Rose are going to be competitive soon, options are what they need, because it's going to allow them to be flexible in terms of figuring out what makes the team work. That's what led to their success in 2014-2015. So, you know, props to him, and hopefully he can keep rolling and have a great finish to the season, and, you know, maybe make himself into quite a player.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I mean, I've never been like a huge O'Hearn fan, but he definitely had some good years. Like, you know, Lexington, he just, like 2015, he crushed. I think he had 27 homers over two levels or something. So he's definitely got some power. It's not necessarily like 25, 30 home run power, but I think he could be a hitter. You know, wasn't hitting great in Omaha this year, but, you know, they like what they saw. They mentioned exit velocities were pretty good, and Clint Scholes mentioned a little bit of that too. He joins Mark Quinn and Clint Hurdle as Royals to hit a home run in their major league debut, and also joins Hurdle as being the only two Royals to hit a home run as their first hit in their first game.
Interestingly enough, so the first hurdle he will have to overcome is being better than both of those two players.
That was very much a Ben Wyatt, Barney in accounting kind of pun.
I am in accounting. Well, I'm an auditor.
Yeah, you are.
So should expect nothing less from me.
Yeah, I should have seen that.
You definitely should have.
But yeah, O'Hearn, you know, he just turned 25 like a week ago. So, you know, pretty cool to see him up. I don't know if they're going to play him at first, or if they're doing this anticipating that Lucas Dude is going to be traded soon. It definitely could be something that happens. Dude, I think, would fit in on someone's bench in a playoff race. Maybe, you know, I wouldn't expect to get a whole lot for Lucas Duda, but I think he'll probably get traded. The Royals have, you know, O'Hearn or Frank Schwindel. Either of those guys could probably play some first base for him. Hunter Dozier's been doing it quite a lot this year. So it's definitely, you know, they get a kind of a glimpse of some of those guys now. And O'Hearn's, you know, so far he's really taken advantage of the opportunity. So, pretty cool call up. Brian Goodwin, who we just kind of mentioned, he went on the 10-day DL to make room for that. Chesler Cuthbert went on the 60-day DL. I'm starting to feel like the dream is over for Chesler Cuthbert with the Royals, but, you know, plenty of time to make that judgment, I guess. But it's starting to feel like
it's not looking good.
You know, didn't have a good year, got hurt, and, you know, who knows? So, I don't know. So those are some of the odds and ends that we kind of got. Eric Skoglund, Jesse Hahn, and Blaine Boyer, they're all in Omaha now on rehab assignments. So they're all in the 60-day DL. So if they're able to come back, there's going to be some other moves. I don't know what. Due to the whatever team, that would probably be one. Brandon Maurer, maybe. Might be a designated for assignment choice. So I don't know. We'll see in the next couple of weeks kind of how those guys kind of shape up and how the Royals kind of manipulate the roster. But yeah, right now, you know, they're kind of just playing some of those fun players. You know, Herrera and Mondesi I saw last night. I think it was a line drive to Mondesi to end an inning. And Herrera was playing third. And the two of them were like racing to the dugout like little leaguers. Like, well, that's pretty kind of cool. You know, for all the corniness of it, you know, being a kid's game and the romanticism of all of that, it's kind of cool to see a couple guys just, yeah, let's race to the dugout, whatever.
Yeah, and,
you know, have some fun out there. They're getting an opportunity to play every day and doing good things with it.
It's pretty cool. Easy to lose sight of that when you're losing as much as the Royals are. So, yeah, it absolutely is. Yeah. It's cool to see that, you know. The possible, not only because when you lose like that, it gives opportunities to players to get some extra playing time that maybe they weren't anticipating. But another kind of silver lining to that cloud is just that there's no pressure. You know, you can kind of let loose and just work on some things and try and, you know, try and you don't have to focus as much on making sure that your play is absolutely tight, you know, because it's you're 40 games under 500. You lose another game, you know, what is it? What does it really matter? So it,
right.
You know, sometimes that can be kind of freeing to players and can kind of help. And then once you have that pressure off and then you see that you succeed, then it becomes easier when the pressure's on. You say, okay, you're not scared because you know, okay, I've done it. So that's why it's been good recently to see Mondesi starting to play well, you know, because he had so much adversity in terms of his performance early in his career. You wonder if, okay, does that start to get into his head? But the pressure's off now. He's able to play every day at the major league level. And, you know, he's starting to show some signs that he could be closer to the player that we were hoping than he has been, at least in the past. So that's good. And it's always good to see things like that. And then the camaraderie as well. You know, we've seen in just the recent team that how good and how underrated it is to have that team chemistry. So if you, the more players that you have that kind of foster that environment, I think the better it's going to be for the Royals moving forward. So definitely agree with it being pretty cool to see stuff like that.
Yeah, they're becoming more of a fun team, and they weren't a very fun team a couple of months ago. So if nothing else, I guess there's that.
Yeah, and we,
bullpen's still not that fun.
But we talked about that too. We talked about how, you know, at some point it was going to flip over and it was going to become pretty fun. And it's starting to get there if it's not there already. So that's cool, at least. You know, makes for a little bit more of an enjoyable second half of the season. Or final 2 months of the season, I mean.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. Meanwhile, the Royals just keep scoring on the White Sox, which is also
fun. Yes, their offense. I mean, the last 3 weeks or so has risen. Last month, really.
Yeah.
It's been pretty good.
Especially compared to June.
Yes. The literal.
Scored 6 runs all of June. Pretty rough.
Pretty rough month, you know, some would say.
Pretty. Yeah.
But I'm going to pull it up here just so I can get. So we can do a quick kind of rundown here. And let's see. So, I mean, the Royals, they've only had less than 4 runs. Let's see. That's 2, 3. So only 4 times in the month of July did they have less than 4 runs, as opposed to June.
What kind of nonsense
is
that?
I know, right? Who are these teams? What have you done with the Royals?
I didn't know that was allowed.
As opposed to June, where they only had 3 games where they did have 4 runs or more in the entire month. So been quite a bit more lively with the bats. And some of that may be the injection of the new players and the younger guys and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, it still may not be the most prettiest of baseball as we head down the stretch here, the final stretch of the season. But it might be a little bit more fun to watch. And at this point, that's kind of all we can hope for.
That's all that's left.
That's all that's left. So, well, speaking of all that's left, I think that's all that's left for the show here. So I think with that, we will end our show for this week. Kind of an interesting week again, Moose, with another bittersweet moment as he appears to likely be gone. People have whispered of the Royals trading him off and then possibly signing him again in the offseason. I wouldn't put it past them, but we'll see, I guess.
It's possible.
Certainly.
I mean, we talked about Chester Cuthbert. I mean, he's maybe not in the future, but I don't know. I feel like the Royals, I feel like every time they trade someone off, that comes. I remember when they traded Zach Greinke, it was like, well, you can bring Greinke back when we're good again in 2 years, and then, you know, he'll be good on a good team.
Right. You
know? Okay, yeah. That didn't really
and
work.
And are you going to pay him $31 million a year?
Right.
Or where's that going to come from?
Yeah, so, but I mean, you know, it's possible. Definitely the Royals like him. You know, if the Royals weren't pushed to move him, they probably would have kept him, but it was in their interest to move him. And this departure wasn't as like wrenching as when like Enzo Cain signed somewhere else, because we already kind of said goodbye to Moustakas last October, and this time it was just kind of like, oh cool, Moose is around.
Yeah.
All right, see ya.
All right.
Say hi to Lorenzo and Joaquin for
thanks
us.
For...
And Jeremy Jefferson, Manny Pena, and maybe there's one more up there.
There might be.
I don't know.
Like a little
a lot of
like
guys
a class
in the Brewers
reunion.
Used to be Royals.
A lot of guys on the Brewers used to be Royals who used to be Brewers.
Yeah. Kind of weird.
It's kind of weird how that works, isn't it? They just need to find a way to get Jake Odorizzi back. Oh wait, I don't know where he ended up. Where did he end up? He was
Twins. He got moved somewhere.
I think he's on the Twins. That's right.
Yeah, maybe he's hurt. I don't know. Yeah.
Regardless,
he's somewhere out there. He'll find his way, one way or another.
So anyway, with that, we'll leave you. Thank you so much for listening. We love you all. We appreciate it. We talked about and kind of detailed outlined some of the articles recently, but with Clint's breakdown of the Moose trade and Craig trying to make sense of what direction the Royals are going. So if you want to read those articles in full, and I highly suggest that you do, you should go to BP Kansas City, of course, a big part of us and who we are. We got a lot of stuff coming out besides all this. I'm sorry. Did I say Craig? It was Lesky that wrote the article. I'm sorry. Making sense of Dayton's plan. My apologies.
And Darren had one of kind of like, hey, layoff Dayton
yes,
more a little bit.
Yes. So
there's a lot of stuff.
Yes. So my apologies to David Lesky. It was Lesky that wrote the article, trying to make sense of Dayton's plan. So definitely read
He'll
that. I'm
over.
Sure he will. he's a strong lad.
Right.
So. Be sure to go and check those articles out, along with all the other fantastic stuff that we have, including this podcast. And also be sure to visit our other sponsor, Kelly's Westport Inn. Anytime you head out, head to Westport, want to have a good time, have a few beers, be sure to go in, have it at Kelly's. Always a fun time to go there. Makes the watching the Royals baseball at this point a little bit more palatable if you got a nice cold beer waiting for you, which you always do at Kelly's. So be sure to visit them, help support them, and thereby supporting us. So with that, we'll end the show. We'll see you next week. Thank you all so much for stopping by. And until next time, we'll see you next time. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.